My name is Ralph Dietrich. I live in Midwestern Ontario, about 2 hours from Toronto or London, about an hour from Guelph, Ontario. I have a family farm, farm with my wife and my son and my son-in-law in the corporation. We have two operations where we milk cows at home farm. It's been converted to a robot facility, so there's 55 cows there that are milked by robot. The other farm is a milking parlor, double 12. We milk about 120 cows there. In addition to that, we have a couple other operations that we manage and operate. One is a calving business where we custom calve about 80 to 100 cows a week. Let me rephrase that, 80 a month, it'd be a heavy week, 80 to 100 cows a month. Then the calves that we calve, we actually relocate to a calf farm that we have. So we have about 300 there, raise them from. Some will be there 3 weeks, some will be there 3 months, depending on their genetic value and that. We have six children, and two of which are involved in the operation, like I said. And my role is that I'm an elected representative from my area on the board of the Dairy Farmers of Ontario, and then have been selected by the board to be chairman of the board of Dairy Farmers of Ontario.
Good morning. My name is Will Vanderhorst. I have a dairy farm 2 hours east of Toronto. Milk about 55 or 60 cows. Family operation. I work with my wife and one full-time employee. Our children, we have five children, all still in school. Our oldest is 22 and our youngest is 8. I was elected to the board in 2012 and represent about 213 farms east of Toronto on the board of Dairy Farmers of Ontario.
Can you guys share a little bit more on the structure, how Ontario Dairy Farmers of Ontario works and represents farmers within the province?
Okay, first of all, it's a 12-member board. The province is divided into 12 regions. As much as possible, we try to make the regions similar in size if we can with respect to the number of producers represented, but that has changed over the years. And some, of course, are geographically much larger than others. So the governance structure is that as dairy farmers in a county, the counties, we have 42 of those in the province, they will elect amongst themselves a county milk committee. And then those county milk committees will work a little more closely with us as board members. We'll meet them back in our zones for meetings. The zones themselves elect a board member to represent that zone. They're elected for a four-year term. We have 12 members on the board, so every year three of us as board members come up for re-election. We like the process. It's one that guarantees an opportunity for new input and the opportunity for our committees to choose as well, though it does also provide a guarantee of some continuity for the board, which is a good thing as well. So that's the original structure. Will, maybe you want to talk about our committee structure?
So we have committees in every county. They're elected annually, so farmers get elected to those committees, and we rely on that grassroots input. We have several policy conferences during the year, and that helps keep board members' feet to the fire, and we rely on their input for policy making.
In the U.S., many farmers might be members of a cooperative, which may process the milk or market milk through other processors. How does that differ in Canada?
Well, in Canada, first of all, there's only one place for the milk. All the milk is sold by the farmers to us, the Ontario Milk Marketing Board, Dairy Farmers of Ontario. So we take ownership of all the milk, of course, as always. It's collected on every second day basis. So then what we do is we allocate the milk to the processing plants based on their requests for a capacity that they do request us for. The milk is sold, and depending on the end use of the milk is the dollar value that's attached to it. Processors pay us DFO, and then in turn we match that out to the producers based on, it's a blended price, so the price is blended based on the different classes and the proportion that went towards each. And then further to that, it's distributed to our producers twice a month. They'll get an interim check in the middle of the month and the final check at the end. So the one is the calculation. The variation in price comes from that the farmers are paid on their component price. So we have a blend price that's the same for everybody, and then that varies to individual producers based on their individual components on their farm.
Having a supply management system for the country, how does that fit into producer decisions if you're expanding the farm or maybe want to see opportunities? How does that work for your country?
Well, we do have production quotas, so a farm expansion would be would involve acquiring more quota. Every province in the country has a monthly quota exchange, so there is opportunity to purchase quota from farms that are going out of business, or producers may decide to downsize. We've had the good fortune in Canada to have had extraordinary growth over the last 3 or 4 years. Consumer demand for butter and cheese has grown exponentially, so we have been able to increase quotas almost 25% over the last 3 years. So there is a fair bit of expansion going on currently.
So, yes, as Will mentioned, the growth in the last few years has been very, very, very nice. So what that has done is taken a bit of a pressure off our system, because that really has accommodated most producers' aspirations with respect to growth. As business people, we always want to strive to continue to grow. Standing still is what they say, going backwards. So growth is an objective. So supply management, as Will said, it's based on a quota or an allocation of the right to produce a certain amount of milk. It is such that at times when we have not had this good growth, has inhibited, I would say, or slowed down what some producers would like to do with respect to growth. So in the supply managed system, some producers might be stymied. They might feel that way with respect to growth opportunities. And that we don't apologize that for the system. We take into consideration that there is an opportunity for growth. Our projection going forward is for organic and domestic growth of about 3%. It's not phenomenal, but it's growth. But what we have to consider as well is the advantages and the opportunities that supply managed system does give our producers. It puts us in a position as producers to have input with respect to the pricing of our product. So we're, in a sense, partial price makers, not takers. In addition to that, if we look at our system in comparison to the rest of the systems around the world, the United States included, we don't envy anyone else. And in fact, I think, and we've heard that a lot of other producers are wishful that they could have a system something to ours. So it's been interesting. I was in Wisconsin and we're in Michigan this week, and really our role down here is just from an awareness perspective, to the individuals, to your producers in your state. We know that we have a system that works for us. So we're just trying to help out by, providing some knowledge and trying to answer some questions.
How long have you been operating under a system, and what really was the inspiration and creation behind it?
So about 1960, of course, there was government involvement. So in the early 60s, there was a lot of similarities to what your current situation is here. There was a lot of turmoil and discontent around the countryside and the dairy industry. Like I said, similar to here, we had some producers who were just exceptionally happy, depending on their proximity. They were the cream of the crop, if you pardon the pun. They were had increases allowed to them, and they were receiving top prices for the milk, but yet their fellow producers farther out in the countryside were being left aside and stranded, and just even at points in time, as we've heard here, I don't need your milk anymore. The processors would tell them that. So a lot of people of the day were concerned and questioning the government and pushing the government. So to the credit of the government, they took the initiative to investigate and look. So at that point in time, I think it was 63, Great Britain, England, had a system of supply management, regulated marketing. So our Minister of Agriculture of the day, Bill Stewart, sent the deputy over to England to study their system and to see if there's ways that we could do something like that in Canada, in Ontario. So he came back, they made a report, and once again, to the government's credit and the producers of the day pushing them for it, they went through, and in 1965, the Milk Act. Milk Act was passed in the government of Ontario, in the province of Ontario. What the Milk Act did was give regulation to the dairy farmers to be able to do what we're doing today. So the initial board was appointed by the province of Ontario, and since then time, the current governance system that we have talked about was instituted, and from then on, the board members attending the board were elected by the producers of their areas.
Canada's dairy system seems to be one of the now major focuses of NAFTA negotiations and tariffs and the trade disputes. What's the feedback maybe from your members or farmers, how that makes you feel in the relationships between the two countries, or what you've seen on the other side of the border?
So, I mean, it makes our producers nervous. There's no doubt about that. But Canada has negotiated probably 15 trade agreements over the last 25 years. Dairy always is a target. We have some border measures that we need to make our supply managed system work. That always, raises questions from our negotiating countries. But our system has survived. We've always felt under threat, our system was created in 1965. We celebrated 50 years just a couple of years ago. I think we have, the Canadian public approves of our system. We've done, several market studies that would suggest over 80% of consumers in Canada, like the system. They appreciate the fact that we have a stable and working environment, and because of the stable economic environment that we work in, we can invest in our farms, be good environmental stewards, take good care of our animals, and contribute to the well-being of rural Canada. So they see value in the system, and we do have some confidence in our government that they will continue to support us. Another big factor is the fact that, dairy in Canada has no government subsidies. We're self-sufficient. We get our income from the marketplace. And the governments really recognize that as a very important feature of our system.
So, yes, you're exactly right. Your president has certainly put dairy front and center in the news. And, I don't blame the man. In fact, I give him credit for wanting to do something for his dairy producers. That's good. And keeping in mind that as much as he wants to do that, it's the responsibility of our Prime Minister to ensure that he's doing the same thing, that he's looking after his dairy producers. So we have a system in the States that is not working. The producers will admit it, and the government has admitted it as well. Your president has, because he's saying we've got to fix it. His thought process that a fix for a system in the States that is not working is to eliminate a system in Canada that is working. So I'm sure that if the roles were reversed, and if Canada had the system or the States had supply management, Canada didn't, that if our Prime Minister came to the States and said, you have to get rid of your system so you can help us survive, well, I'm pretty sure I know what the response would be. But that's not the big thing. The big thing is he's thinking that the elimination of our system is a solution to your problems in the States, and really it's not. He's gone part way. He's recognized the system has to be fixed, and that's good. What you have in the States is no good. It has to change. Let's go a little deeper. Why is it no good? Is it no good because we have supply management? He's seeming to indicate so, like tariffs, 270%. He's not wrong in that. However, the United States also have their areas where they have tariffs in excess of 300 or 350% of some of their products, peanuts, sugars. So let's take that with what it is. Okay, each country is looking after their own. But why is this system not working? Quite bluntly, and I think if you want to sit and think about it, it's not working because there's too much milk being produced. This entire world, no matter what the commodity is based on supply and demand. And if you look back over the graphs of the ebbs and flows and the valleys and the peaks in the production that the farmers, or the prices the farmers have received in the States, look back. Any time when it's gone really high prices, and I understand, good prices here. Like 2014, for instance, high prices. Why? Because the world price of dairy was high. So what happens? Whenever there's a high price in any product, be it dairy, beef, pork, cash crops, whatever it is, what happens? More people want to get into it. Okay? Your system allows anybody and everybody to get into it, and that's what's been happening. You can milk more cows, you know, or new producers come in, and that's great until what they get in for happens, and that's the production of milk. So what has taken place with high prices, more incentive to produce because there's a lot of money in it, production comes, all of a sudden there's too much, price drops. Drops to the extent where you have farmers going out of business, going broke, going bankrupt. What happens then? Because they're done and because a lot of cows are slaughtered, the volume of milk decreases to the point in time when there's more needed, and vice versa, your cycle goes up and down. One thing a little different though about this particular downturn in the cycle, if you go back over a number of years, you'll see it's been usually a 2-3 year period of time, and then it starts to rebound again. This one's different. This one's longer. I think a large reason why it's longer is because 2 years ago, or thereabouts, the European Union got rid of the system that they had, which is currently closer to what we have, supply management, regulated marketing. When that happened, producers were very happy. You know, we can sell twice as much milk. Some of them were. We can sell twice as much milk and make twice as much money. So some of them did that. And what happened? Same story. Too much milk. Now, to complicate matters, 2 years ago, when Europe did have regulated marketing, you had some countries over there that were maybe sufficient in dairy. Okay? After, with increased production, instead of becoming just sufficient with dairy, they became exporters of dairy. They provided more competition for the United States and everywhere else because, free system, they could produce as much as they want. As well, those countries that were importers of dairy 2 years ago now maybe have increased their production to the point where they're even sufficient, self-sufficient. So they're not exporting, but they also have shut down an import market for the rest of the world. So there's less places for the milk to go, so if it doesn't go somewhere, it becomes an even greater surplus. So I'm predicting that the downturn in this cycle, unfortunately for dairy producers, is going to remain longer than in the past and probably will not regain as high as it did in the past unless there's more things come into play than just letting farmers go out of business through bankruptcy and go. I personally feel that the world has to take a look at things. Another thing complicating this now more than ever is that the world is a much smaller place. We're trading on an international basis much more. So we no longer do we worry about just the milk and supply in the United States or in Canada or not even North America. We have to consider the total availability of milk around the world. So we have to recognize that we have to be responsible. We have to assess accurately as we can what are our requirements. You know, and yes, we'll have some export opportunities. We're going to have world growth in population, and we need to account for that. But we need to account for that as it happens, not do it all now and expect to have a place for it. So I firmly believe, and I think anybody would have to think about it. Like, we need to assess the problem. So the problem is not supply management in Canada for the dairy farmers. That's a pittance. The problem is there's too much milk in the system, and that's what needs to be dealt with.
Do you have any last thoughts to leave us with?
We have a system that works in Canada. Dairy farmers in Canada work under a very stable pricing and, economic environment. And I think your farmers are struggling and have experienced a lot of volatility in farm gate prices for, a long, long time. We don't profess to have all the answers, but... rather than challenging our system, maybe U.S. dairy industry and, the U.S. administration, President Trump should take a look at our system. We think it works well, and, I don't think that Canada, that our entire country produces about the same amount of milk as the state of Wisconsin. I don't think Canada is going to be the solution to U.S. Dairy policy problems. Maybe take a look at supply management. It might be a solution.
Yeah, I think so. Like, as Will said, we're not the solution. A couple facts. First of all, the daily excess surplus production of milk in the states of New York, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Just the amount of surplus produced every day in those three states only is more than the entire production of the province of Ontario on a daily basis. You have the state of Wisconsin, you know, producing maybe almost half again as much as the entire country of Canada. California is bigger than that. Putting all these numbers together, you know, the country of Canada cannot, is not even big enough to swallow your surplus production. So it, you know, sometimes we have to look at things and say it is what it is. Supply management does work for us. It's not a system that will last forever without some, you know, updating and monitorization. We've recently gone through that in our system with our ingredient strategies discussions, but I know for certain there are bits and pieces of our system that will work here, and they won't work just for the dairy farmers. Supply management is not just working for the dairy farmers. Yes, it's good for them, for sure, but it's also good for processors. We have processors investing a lot of money, and if you want to look back about 15 years or thereabouts when Parmalat went broke, the dairy processing giant Parmalat International, the only profitable operation they had in the world was in Canada under a supply managed system. It works for processors. It works for consumers as well. Consumers, as much as you hear that our consumers are being gouged by supply management, that's not the case. Look at the dairy basket cost to consumers around the world, and there's graphs. Canada is not the highest, and it's not that much different than the United States. And finally, it certainly, as Will said, works for the government as well. We pride ourselves as farmers in being able to derive our income from the work that we do to produce our products, and everyone does. And that's what supply management allows us to do. It does not put us in a position to have to go to the government on our hands and knees and asking for dollars that we desperately need because we cannot get them from the work we do milking cows. Supply management gives us that.